Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mike Coughlin, President and CEO of McKinney Flavelle, and today is May 12th, 2021, and welcome to our Hot Commodity Podcast Series. I'm joined by... Well, first, it's Holy WASDE Day, so we're going to give you a recap of the WASDE report today, joined by the three, count them, one, two, three best analysts in the entire universe. Universe, I went universe, guys, gals. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's Nicole. Nicole Thomas.
How many analysts do you know outside of Earth? I'm curious.
A few.
There's some good ones.
You know, my son Nate knows a lot of aliens, and
I don't know if you want to tell people that.
I know. Oh my gosh! Now I'm on a list. Kevin Combs, Vice President, McKinney Flavelle. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Mike. Hello, everybody.
You heard Nicole Thomas, Vice President, McKinney Flavelle, and last but not least, who is that awesome voice?
Eric Thornton.
Oh my gosh, that was not me, Eric.
That wasn't Eric's voice, but
Kevin tried. But yeah, good afternoon, everybody. Good afternoon, Mike. Hi, Kevin.
Yes,
Mike, Nicole.
Yes, happy WASDE Day to everybody out there. And today, I thought we'd cover a little bit of the things going on in the commodity space and what the WASDE report said and how it might impact the markets moving forward. But first off, do you have any gas, Nicole? Being all the way there in Atlanta. Do you have any guess?
I am one of those people that keeps their tank reasonably full.
Okay.
In preparation of the zombie for the zombie apocalypse.
Got it.
Don't judge me, but I'm good.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's good. How about, Eric, are you impacted? Are you filling up jugs of gas?
I'm not that far yet, but I have to make a road trip this weekend, so I may have to have a five-gallon reserve in the trunk, if you know what I mean. But I'm not filling up a drum or a tote like some people are.
I like how he said, you know what I mean.
You know what I mean? Yeah. No, I have no idea. No.
I've run into some folks in the Pacific Northwest, one of the weirdest areas in the country, but I don't know what you mean. But
Well...
You don't have to explain, Eric. We'll wait a little bit. Well, let's go ahead and get started before we get too crazy. And Nicole, why don't we start with you? What did they do with corn and soybeans?
So speaking of weird, there were some weird things in the reports today. Well, let's start with corn. And the big thing was this was our first glimpse at USDA's thoughts on supply and demand for 21-22. And a little bit of firming of numbers for 2021 current marketing year. But let's start with what we're going to see in the upcoming crop. And the initial forecast for ending stocks put the U.S. at a little over 1.5 billion bushels with a pretty bullish stocks-to-use ratio of 10.2% to start. And it seems USDA is expecting good weather this growing season with an average yield of 179.5 bushels per acre for total production of just under 15 billion bushels. I would say reasonably in line with expectations in that sense. And demand is projected to grow by a bit more than 200 million bushels, around 2%, mostly due to a rebound in the food, seed, and industrial category, especially ethanol. And some of that partially offset by lower export demand, which still sits on the higher end of what we would typically see in a given year for U.S. corn exports. Now, for the remainder of 2021, the balance sheet got a little tighter. U.S. ending stocks fell by nearly 100 million bushels to 1.257 billion, putting stocks to use at a pretty abysmal 8.5%. And the culprit was a likewise increase to export demand, now pegged at 2.775 billion bushels. Now, let's talk about the global scenario, because this is where things get interesting. Now, as far as 21-22, nothing too surprising in today's report. Globally, production projected to grow by over 61 million metric tons, or a little under 5.5%. Looking at an anticipated 16 million metric ton increase in Brazil, 4 million metric tons in Argentina, 7.2 in Ukraine, and over 7.3 million metric tons in China. and ending stocks are projected to increase to about 292 million metric tons. That's up a little under 9 million metric tons or 3% from 2021. But because demand is also projected to rise by 3%, stocks to use is expected to remain relatively consistent near 21.2% for the global part. Then we get to looking at 2021. And these numbers I struggled a bit, and Eric can attest to this because I came to him a little frantic earlier today. Yeah. Like, help me understand this because apparently I'm missing something.
Eric, do you want to do an impression of that call?
It was more through the Teams chat, but there might have been definitely some anxiety and stress coming through on those messages for sure.
Maybe a few expletives.
Yeah, a couple dot, dot, dots and dash, dash. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Signs, dollar signs, you know, I won't. This is a family podcast, so I won't share that there. But so
Dave's
the
listening.
Yeah, right. So the market has been anticipating a reduction to Brazilian production, right? And, you know, late plantings combined with dry weather. And in this case, USDA did not disappoint. We got a 7 million metric ton reduction to the projection that now stands at 102 million metric tons. That value could be lower yet. There are certainly some analysts projecting even lower numbers that are out in the trade now. But we'll give it time via, you know, future reports and ongoing progress of Brazil's crops to see that in the numbers. But ending stocks were left unchanged at 283.5 million metric tons, which seemed interesting to me. So I'm like, okay, how did we get there? So first, there was a reduction to beginning stocks globally. It sounds vaguely familiar.
Yes,
those were lowered by 1.5 million metric tons. And the change had to have been attributed to stocks in countries that aren't called out on the monthly balance sheet. Just couldn't find it with, you know, our usual suspects, so to speak. Secondly, Brazilian exports were lowered by 4 million metric tons. And only 2.5 of that offset can be attributed to the U.S. with the increase to export demand here. And no adjustments were made to estimates for any other major exporter. Instead, we got a 3.5 million metric ton reduction to imports into the EU and ultimately took that out of consumption in the EU, which in itself is a little interesting. So, you know, there's limited availability of poultry numbers, so to speak, but chicken meat production per the FAS is projected to increase by about 175,000 tons in 2021. The baby cow crop there is projected to remain flat, and swine stocks are projected slightly higher in 2021 than the year prior. So the likely answer is that these producers are using substitutes for corn and feed, like wheat, other grains, which in the grand scheme of things supports prices for other crops and subsequently ultimately supports prices for corn as well. Then Chinese imports were reduced by 2 million metric tons and consumption was left untouched at 289 million tons. So basically assumes the additional demand will come out of reserves, which I guess is plausible. That would be the approach with prices, you know, pushing towards $8 per bushel. But it's just as plausible in this environment that something either isn't being accounted for or will show up in later reports. So that's just kind of where we'll leave it for corn. I'm still kind of scratching my head on that one.
Okay.
Now for the soy side, let's start with soybeans for 21-22. Production at a little over 4.4 billion bushels. Of course, we're hoping for more acres and ultimately more production. So we'll see what we get there. Utilization in 21-22 expected to decline with lower exports. Again, not so surprising there. Crush anticipated to remain strong. Processors are making good money these days on meal and soybean oil. Pretty good board crush value. So in that sense, that all makes sense. Now, as far as the current marketing year, no change made to ending stocks. And I don't know, pretty risky because prices surely don't reflect it. You know, you got soybean futures just today rally, let's see where July end up, 27, almost 28 cents higher on that on the July 21 contract. And cash basis indicators around a plus 60 over July. So makes you kind of wonder if USDA just doesn't want to add fuel to the bullish fire. Both marketing year-to-date crush and exports would suggest that those ending stocks are down at least another 10 million bushels or so from the 120 million they've got on the sheet now. So we'll see how that develops over time as well. Globally, ending stocks for beans came down a bit, 86.5 for 2021. And hopefully the recovery begins by the second half of 21-22, with stocks projected to rise a little over 91 million metric tons. So not our best year ever, but certainly an improvement over this year for sure. And it's certainly going to depend on projected increases in South America, pretty significant. Brazil up 8 million metric tons to 144, and Argentina looking to produce 52, up from 47 this year. So that leaves us with soybean oil.
Oh, God.
Yes. If you only knew the last few months I've had. Well, the folks I'm talking to, they know.
You've had an opportunity to show your expertise.
Yeah, yeah. And play the, you know, being a McKinney customer isn't just about market analysis. We're therapists as well, if you didn't know. So, you know, we just like a therapist, we take you down and then we build you back up. As far as soybean oil is concerned, this year's ending stocks actually got a boost up to over a little over 1.8 billion pounds thanks to lowered usage for exports. They reduced that 200 million pounds from where it was in the April report, but domestic use increased by 100 million pounds. So your net 100 million pound difference. Now, we could also potentially see another nominal boost in ending stocks. Unfortunately, not likely to see that in any reports until we're past the marketing year. And that's because USDA is using an average yield of 11.65 pounds per bushel. And what we've been seeing, at least via NOPA of late, is that those yields have been running higher, closer to 11.8 pounds per bushel. So maybe another few hundred million pounds. And like I said, because you probably won't see that firmed up until past this year, it could at least be a boost to beginning stocks for 21-22. And, you know, that could help down the road as well. Now, the big thing, though, for soybean oil, we have a new category, biofuels. The problem before was we had the biodiesel category, which was supposed to be strictly for that is produced via methyl esters. But they've been sliding in a little of that renewable diesel usage there and leaving some in the food, seed, and industrial category. It's a little confusing. So now both biodiesel and renewable diesel usage will be in that biofuels category. Gives us a little better visibility on how much oil is going towards production of both. And speaking of that category, usage in 2021 is estimated at 9.5 billion pounds, up by nearly a billion from the year prior.
Jeez.
I know. Now, for those of you who were at our spring seminar, we talked about how that number could surpass 10 billion pounds of annual usage as early as this year. And it looks like that's a real possibility that we may see that for 2021. Wow. And then for 21-22, USDA is forecasting usage of 12 billion pounds.
Holy smokes.
Whoa.
That is a lot of oil. And any user of edible oils is already feeling the effects and price offerings. And I'm going to talk about that a bit more in this week's Soy Complex post on IQ. So you can check that out late Friday afternoon. Good but the scary point. Thing at this point is, though, it's early. You're looking at the stocks to use for soybean oil in 21-22, and at least at this point, it's projected at 5.6% compared to 7% now. So basically saying things are going to get tighter. So that's wise.
The thing that caught my eyes on that, like 45% of consumption of soybean oil is forecast to be biofuels.
I know, right?
Wow.
That's a lot of oil going to that category. It is.
I think we're going to be hearing more debate about food versus fuel.
Yeah, it's so too. Mm-hmm. I think too. I may be hearing a little bit about that now.
Nicole, great recap. Shall we shift over to my favorite person in Rochester, New York, Eric?
Yeah, let's talk wheat. I guess great recap, Nicole, on corn and soy, and we'll round out the grains with wheat here and take a look first at what they adjusted for the crop year 2020-21. We saw some modest adjustments in the import category, rising by 5 million bushels, and then being reduced by 5 million bushels, and then food usage rose by 5 million. So offsetting modest changes there, but the more significant change, which was expected, you know, slightly here, was in the export arena. So we saw exports reduced from 985 million bushels down to 965 million bushels. And with just 2.5 weeks or so to go in the marketing year, certainly that was justified given the pace of exports overall the last few months haven't been on pace to meet that 985 million bushel target. So net-net, we see a total all wheat ending stocks increase from 852 million bushels up to 872 million bushels. So that helps for the outlook at 21-22, which we already have an idea of where acreage is going to be based on the prospective plantings report, which was 46.4 million total acres. Harvested area, actually, they're pegging at 37.4 million, which is a little eyebrow raising in comparison to years past at a 9 million acre difference, when typically the planted versus harvested acres come in somewhere around 7 to 8 million acres. So, you know, thoughts there is maybe USDA's factoring in some more significant loss of winter wheat crops given the volatility and extreme weather we had throughout the dormancy period with, you know, cold stretches late in the season and very dry start to planting last year, which some crops may have struggled to survive. But ultimately, still seeing that production will be quite solid, just under 1.9 million bushels, or billion bushels, that is. And the biggest change of note when looking at the balance sheet for next year, again, really early, but exports, USDA's forecasting will be all the way down to 900 million bushels. And again, they just lowered 2020-21 here from 985 to 965. So pretty decent reduction in export expectations, and it's the lowest, if true, that we'll see since 2009 crop year. And a lot of that, as I talked about in our spring seminar again, is we continue to see the U.S. fall down the charts as a global exporter at the, you know, the detriment to Ukraine, Russia, Australia, Canada. Again, we continue to see the U.S.'s share in that global export arena shrink. So certainly USDA is coming out pretty bold here and shrinking that category substantially. And then we also saw a good jump towards the feed and residual demand, which Nicole mentioned too, is with tighter soybean and corn stocks, we're seeing many countries, in particular China, increase wheat for feed use, which is expected in tighter corn and soy situations. So that category is expected to rise 70 million bushels up to 170 million bushels for 21-22. And depending on how crop turns out here the next 3-4 months in the U.S. and in the Northern Hemisphere, you could see that number going up even further as we progress throughout the crop year 21-22. So net-net, after factoring in the supply and demand scenarios, we're seeing ending stocks projected to fall from 872 million bushels to 774 million bushels. So that is a little bit better than what industry expectations were. Most seem to come in an average near 750. But again, I think factoring in the beginning stocks adjustment there based on the export adjustment for 2020-21, you know, we're coming in with a little bit better stock situation than, you know, many analysts probably forecasted. So that's the U.S. picture. Globally, we're really not seeing a massive adjustment in ending stocks and probably a little bit below expectations. Again, I think many were seeing numbers in the high 290 million metric ton range, but where we stand today versus 21-22, we're seeing that numbers will come in at 200 and near 294.5 million metric tons, pretty much right on par with where we're projecting to end out the 2020-21 season. So again, early. I think there's some production estimates in there that will certainly change. And as we get through, you know, the growing season in the Northern Hemisphere, I could see certainly the EU doing better than what the USDA is projecting right now, which is 134 million metric tons. I could see that number going up, and a couple other countries will probably be tweaked. But, you know, overall, I think we'll still have a well-supplied global balance sheet. And again, we'll see, you know, how that wheat for feed category changes globally as well, which may be the catalyst to take stocks down below where they're currently projected. But, you know, overall, I say neutral to bearish, and we're seeing some of that in the price reaction today and the Chicago wheat and Kansas City wheat contracts and Minneapolis to a degree. So pretty much in line with expectations.
Great. Thank you, Eric. Well, let's end it with something sweet and sweet. Shift over to sugar. Kevin, what did they do?
Nothing to get that excited about or worried about. So sugar was pretty boring for a May report. Of course, we did get some new crop projections based on, you know, trend line yields and acreage from the March planting intentions. But let's look at 2021 first. And really the only changes were minor on the production side. They lowered Florida a little bit more than we were expecting at 70,000 tons, but that was offset a little bit by higher beet production of 25,000 tons. So again, we're production-wise, we're down 45,000 overall. And then on the import side, they had to reflect the increase on the Mexico quota. They bumped that up 50,000 tons, but they lowered TRQ imports 48. So almost no change on the import front overall. And net result, minus 43,000 tons to ending stocks, brings the stocks to use ratio at 14.7%. And again, you know, adequate sugar, no real issues to worry about as we transition between crop years. And then 21-22, looking at a huge production number, 9.310 million tons. Beet crop estimated would be the second largest beet crop at 5.225 million tons. That's pretty much right where I expected. You know, we got a little bit more beet acreage. And one of the things they said in their little commentary at the front of the report was excellent planting progress this year, which, you know, I think we've seen very good progress pretty much across all regions, maybe some minor replants here and there to deal with. But Red River Valley, you know, we've had planting issues the last few years, and this is the first year from south all the way up to north where they made excellent progress and no big delays. So with that being 50% of the acreage, it makes opportunity for a really nice crop. And just gonna have to wait and see if weather holds, and you know, they don't have irrigation up there, so it's really critical that they get timely rains along with some good weather. So no big surprises there on that. And the cane side, Florida, they left basically flat versus where they're at for the current year at 2.1 million tons. Louisiana, they lowered it 100,000 tons versus 2021, 1.85 million tons. It's still a really good crop, be their second largest crop ever, I believe, compared to this last year. And the only thing I think that's been a little bit of a setback for them was some cold freeze frost conditions that they had in February that's knocked it off. And we'll have to see if the crop can recover. Look what it just did coming off a, you know, five tropical storms hitting Louisiana, and yet they ended up with a record crop. So I think they still got some time to right the ship and come up with a maybe a little bit better number there. And then a little bit of a surprise, you know, when they forecast imports, they leave everything at minimum, so you don't end up with a 13.5% stocks to use ratio. They leave room for the refined TRQ and specialty TRQ, which is around 140,000 tons. So Mexico is at 965. And then deliveries, demand. You know, we all see question, you know, how the economy is doing, how everything's going as far as added sugars and diets, et cetera. And USDA apparently feels that there's still some sluggish demand out there as they just went flat on deliveries for 21-22. So no growth, which I think is the first time I've seen that in quite some time.
That's absolutely for sure. Okay, great. We're going to wrap this one up. But before we do, I have a special guest. And it's Stella Coughlin. She's going to join our ending of our podcast here today.
Yay!
And yeah. So I just want to say I'm a very proud parent. And Eric, someday you will feel this feeling that I felt the other day. And Kevin and Nicole, you can relate. Stella started her first game as pitcher on her softball team.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent.
I was so proud of her. In fact, the first inning, 1-2-3 strikeouts.
Ooh, Stella.
Slinging it.
That's what they say in the biz is throwing heat. And she threw heat. And she did a great job. And I was such a proud parent. Oh, my gosh. It was a great feeling in there. Stella, congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations, yeah, Stella. Yeah. Great job.
Yeah, and she's 11 now.
It's awesome.
There you go. So for all our listeners out there, I want you to think of one cool thing that your kid did and get that feeling that I just had. It's a real special feeling. So
does like watching Poltergeist count or no? Okay. I go work a little harder.
Guess who wants to watch Poltergeist now? Thanks, Nicole.
Oh, sorry.
Great. Well, we're going to wrap this one. Thank you, Stella. It's always good to have you on the podcast.
You're welcome.
And as I always like to say, live with an attitude of gratitude. Enjoy every minute, moment with your friends, your family, and your daughter, and your son, and whoever else is around. And until next time, take care, everybody.
See ya.
Later.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Favelle's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Favelle.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.